All right, guys, what is up? Welcome back to the THP Strength Podcast. This is episode 4. On this episode with ISOs, with the bros and no hoes, we're going to be talking about what we would do differently if we could start over knowing everything that we know now. We're, whatever, you know, 13 to 25, I guess. We'll do that progression. Do you like that butterfly? Really caught your attention there. So, yeah, if we could start over, what would we do in terms of training, rehab, everything else? You know, so for some of you guys that are younger or like early on in your journey, this will probably be really helpful for you guys. So these guys are on their first set already. I haven't even freaking started mine of my ISOs. Oh, bro, I am sore as balls after my dunk session. Very not good. Isaiah, you can start first. What would you do differently? I mean, you're the highest jumper in the world. Would you change anything?
Yeah. I would definitely change a lot of things. Number one is I wish I would have known about load management from the beginning. I still think it was beneficial that I jumped so frequently, but I would have progressed a lot more quickly from an even younger age if I knew how to train. Even if I knew, actually, the first thing, I wish I would have known how important jumping frequently was at an even younger age. Because I found that.
You would have been discouraged? Oh, I guess you know now. I guess since you know everything now.
Yeah.
So you'd have your wisdom at 25 and be patient enough.
Well, I don't think I would have been discouraged is the thing.
No, I'm saying you have your wisdom of 25. So you're like, yeah. Ha ha.
Yeah, yeah. So I would have, because I learned about how important jumping every day is when I was 16. If I would have known about that at 12, and then
you would have been hooping 8.
Yeah. that's essentially what Jordan Kilgannon is, though. He started jumping every day when he's like 11, something like that.
Yeah, it's interesting because it goes against LTAD. LTAD discourages early, event specialization.
That's the other thing I was going to say, though, is I would have told myself, but don't still play all the sports you're doing and all that stuff. Because I was already essentially jumping frequently, but I would have lowered him way more.
At a younger age,
instead
of skill work? Or you would have done both?
Both. I would have still play basketball, football, baseball, try all those sports, just lower him more frequently. Mm-hmm. I think there would have been two benefits to that. I think I would have been more adapted. I think the reason I started getting so much knee pain is because I found out about jumping every day when I was 16, and then my bounce increased so much, my tendons just couldn't handle it. Whereas if it had been like, if I would have already been jumping that frequently, from before I could generate that much force,
you would have been different.
Yeah, yeah. I think my tendons would have been much more adapted to that.
Did you lower rim a lot, Austin?
Mm-hmm.
Here you go. Take
them. Oh, you want?
No. Clip that to yourself.
No, my ISO integrity. No, I low rimmed all the time, but I didn't low rim that much. Like, it was probably daily for like 30 minutes. I think that's something I would have done differently. I would have jumped way more. I did a bunch of gimmicky workouts too, like vert.
Every single day you low rim for 30 minutes?
Yeah.
Every single day?
I would play basketball, 8-foot rims with my friends and stuff. That's why I'm good. That's why
I'm saying strictly dunking.
Yeah.
At what age?
Probably around 12, 13 it started.
Whoa.
But the thing is, my vert did shoot up, but as I started focusing on basketball and other sports, and I was so obsessed with increasing my vertical, I overtrained all the time. I did every single program, you know, I worked out 2-3 times a day, and then I was very stagnant. So if I could go back and change things, I would definitely have low rim more while I could handle it, because I didn't start getting knee pain until I was, 19.
You know what's really interesting?
Hmm.
Like, you're one of the most resilient people I met. Like, when I met you, you never had knee pain and stuff, and you started when you were 12.
Yeah.
Kilgannon also started 11, 12. He started jumping every day.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's something to that. Like, if you're athletic and doing stuff every day from a young age,
yeah.
Like, I think you can adapt early.
Most research shows that tenopathy starts when you're 14.
Really?
Yeah.
I never had any knee pain ever.
In women, it's 16, and men, it's 14. Mm. That's when it starts presenting.
Yeah, I would work out less because I was overworking, and I would just focus on jumping and maxing out what I could while I was healthy. And yeah, like I would have just not done all the gimmicky crap I saw on YouTube. That's like all the vert shock and the jump attack and the all that stuff. Because I would do that. I would have track practice after school, jumping, sprinting. I'll go straight to the gym, do my vert shock or my whatever lift, and then I would play basketball or low rim, depending on the day. But there was a low rim at my gym at the time, so it was kind of a mix of both.
Yeah.
So it was like every day for hours. So.
And then the.
And I wouldn't party as much.
It's a good advice.
Actually.
Focus on recovery.
And then the other thing is, so start low rimming early. I wish I would have learned just about the science of tendons. Mm. Early, not even like the protocol, but just understand like how it happens. I think that would have prevented a lot of pain and I mean potentially sorrow. 2 years of taking steps backwards. And then the last thing is I would have started THP style training way earlier. I mean I started when I was 20. I think if I would have started at like 18, because I was jumping every day. Like up until I was like 17 and stuff, and I was
you're saying like when you got in the weight room, when you hit a plateau.
Yeah.
I would do the same shit for that. Sorry, same stuff. I would do the same stuff, but obviously, like I didn't. I guess like knowing what I know now, I would totally do this type of training. That's why when I used to talk to people on calls, and they'd be 15 or 16, I was like, I didn't start this until I was about 20, like, and I gained so much. If you start young, with the knowledge and the resilience.
This is interesting because I have my lens is like I did. That at 15, 16 I started doing this style of training that I do now, but where I differed than you guys is that I had no low rim volume, like almost none. I probably did it once every like 2 weeks at my cousin's house.
Yeah,
low rimming wasn't really a like dunking specifically or jumping every day. That was not a thing. That article didn't come out until I was in college. I was in grad school when that came out.
Yeah,
I think it was 2015 or 2014.
That was the Fly Sports one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What year?
I think
was
it was
that?
2014 or 2014. No 2013. It was 2013.
So I didn't read that article until 2014, and at that point I was already doing track, and I was just focused on track. So I like didn't really care. So if I could go back and do it again, I would have definitely learned good technique at a really young age, and I would have perfected it. I would have been a 2 foot jumper. I would not have focused on one. I would have been a 2 foot jumper. That's the first thing I would have done. The second thing I would have done is I would have perfected my technique. I would have used pendulum arm swing and I would have low rimmed, and I would have done it like in my driveway as much as I possibly could, or my cousin's house because he had like a little bit more space on a paved surface. Because I think that even though I practiced 2 foot jumping a lot and I did all the plyos and stuff like that at a young age, I had no concept of how to jump well with good technique off 2 feet. That wasn't a thing. Yeah. When I was in high school, there was no technique primer for 2 foot.
Resources, really? Like
yeah, those resources didn't exist. ISOs were not a thing, so I would have done ISOs. I would have done load management when I ran into tendon issues. I think I still would have done, like with the strength work, I didn't know anything about injuries. So when I was in high school, I probably would have done like injury preventative stuff or like been aware of it. I wouldn't have forced deep squatting. That was a big thing I wish I could take back. I never would have forced deep squatting if I could. That fucked my hips up irreparably for the rest of my life.
And you know what's crazy is I probably, that's one thing I would change too.
Like you would have deep squatted or no?
No, I would have deep front squatted, don't deep back squat.
For your back?
Yeah.
What about deadlift?
Perfect technique. Don't let your technique break like whatsoever.
You wouldn't have ego lifted.
Yeah. I used to ego deadlifts all the time. I wouldn't have done that anymore.
Let's see, what else would I have done differently? I think the biggest difference between me and you guys is that you guys low rimmed a shit ton more than I did. Like my training quality and volume of quality training was way higher, but I had way less specific volume at a young age. So I had a really good like LTAD development if you look at it.
Yeah.
But I lacked the specificity in that area, which again is against traditional LTAD. Like general LTAD says, general to specific. Like who knows? Maybe when I'm 35.
LTAD, by the way, means long-term
athletic development. So maybe when I'm 35, I'll hit my 2 foot peak. Maybe I'll like windmill elbow or like
East Bay or some shit. Like, people would be like, oh my God. Like, then we were all going to look back and be like, you're a genius. Your LTAD was brilliant. But at the moment, you know, it's like, you know, that's not the case. I think for 1 foot, I think it was fine because I think high jump set me up to, like, learn 1 foot jump technique really well. But in terms of, like, the skill of dunking, I don't think that, like, it was beneficial for me in that sense. Dunking is not high jump. It's way different. I say that all the time. They're just different. They're not the same thing. You know, especially off 1 foot. What makes you a good dunker typically makes you bad at high jump. That's why, like, Sutherland's PR is, like, a hair over 7 foot, maybe a hair under. He might have jumped 6'11", 6'10", in a meet. I don't think he's jumped 7 foot, but he's the best 1 foot dunker in the world.
Yeah.
Think about that, right? Like, that's crazy. Same thing with Justin Darlington. Jumped 7 foot. That's a foot lower than the world record, but he's the best dunker in the world. And then people are like, well, what if high jumpers did dunking? And it's like, yeah, have you ever heard of Gian Marco? He's horrible at dunking.
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of good high jumpers that jump over 7 feet or well above 7 feet that are not that good at dunking. Jordan Westner's one of the best dunkers in the country, or high jumpers in the country, and his bag is distance dunks, distance one-handers.
Yeah.
So it's just, they're just not the same thing. Most high jumpers, and even he's a 7'3", 7'4" high jumper.
Really, the only people who were at transfers is guys that played basketball.
Yeah, because of hand speed.
Yeah. I've been thinking about that more and more recently, like since talking to you about it. And I think how many ball handling drills. Like, I would do the Pistol Pete Maravich drills every day. Like, so I didn't start low rimming at 11, 12. But from 11 and 12, I was doing Pistol Pete Maravich drills every single day. I was doing street ball moves every single, and I'm talking like 3-4 hours a day. And I think that's why, like, I can pick things up like this, like, cause it's the same thing. Like, Pistol Pete is doing a drill where you, like, catch the ball like this and go like this. All right, an off the backboard pass is easy. He's telling you to do behind the back passes, and I'm doing that for 30 minutes straight against the wall. You know, regular passes and lobs and all that stuff become easy. He's telling you you're doing this drill against the wall where you throw it hard against a circle. Guess what you do when you catch a lob? You're doing those same catches. So
do you think in terms of coordination,
I mean, look
at hands is like perfect.
I mean, look, I think Dom. So. Yeah. Look at Dom.
Dom's the same way too.
He's a hooper. He dribbles all the time. He'll tell you straight up. Only thing he does is low rim and dribble the basketball.
Yeah.
To practice. Like, that's literally it. He has some of the best hands, I would say, in the world. What did you say that?
Him and his move.
Him and, yeah, like, he has some of the best hands. Like, obviously, it's crazy.
I think street ball moves are.
I think, yeah, specifically street ball moves.
Give me that back.
I wouldn't say necessarily dribbling drills, like, where you're, like, stationary like this or, like, passing a crossover, but.
That didn't transfer for me at all.
My hands have gotten way better low rimming just from doing it twice, though.
Yeah, but something I've always had transfer is, I always separate it between dribbling drills and ball handling drills. Dribbling drills is where you're actually dribbling. Ball handling is, like,
around the world, between your legs,
around the head, like,
catching. Like, the ball's not bouncing on the ground.
Exactly, yeah, anything where the ball's not bouncing against the ground, like.
For skill work.
Is what I consider a ball handling drill, and that is some of the best transfer to dunking that I've seen.
Yeah, whenever I'm dunking my best, like, trick-wise, I'm doing that. Those hands, at least a Pete Maravich, the video that you posted, his hand speed video. I do that daily, typically, when I'm dunking my best, when my East Bays are consistent, when tricks are easy.
I think my weight room development, like, if I had perfect hip mobility, which I wouldn't, because I have fucked up hips, I'm identical to my brother, has the same ones, he rarely lifted at all. Like, if I had perfect hip mobility, I don't think I could get perfect hip mobility. I don't think there's anything I could have done in my development that would have changed the anatomy of my hips to give me better hip mobility. Because my brother stretched all the time. And guess what? He still had the same outcome. 2 torn labrums in his hips. Like, same exact outcome. I don't think any amount of stretching would have changed my hip mobility. I don't think any amount of hip distraction would have changed it. I think it was like, this is in the cards for you. My dad had hip and back problems too. So I think that was going to be a thing no matter what.
Yeah.
And I think if I could, I was going to say the one thing I would have done is I would have deep squatted with perfect technique, you know, and built up more appropriately, or I would have, like, done Oli lifting or something. But I think at the end of the day, I don't think that ever would have been an option based on my hip anatomy.
I think there's just a misconception that you can improve that stuff. Like, you need to move within the limits of your body. Anytime you start trying to push that, I think a lot of people just see, like, a Chinese Olympic weightlifter deep squatting.
Like, oh, I should be able to
do
that.
Yeah, and then they want
to. And every strength
that.
Coach is like, every athlete should move this way.
Yeah, but
it's
like, Like, maybe if you want to take it, if you want to take it to the extreme, it's like, look at one of those like circus performers that can do freaky like flexibility acts, and like, you know, like most people wouldn't look at that and be like, I can do that. But with other, I guess when it's like in the sporting world and it's like a squat where you think it should be something that every human can do, like,
yeah, that's a good point of comparison. Yeah. What about plyos? Would you guys have done more plyos, less plyos? What do you think? I did a lot of plyos in middle school and early high school. And then I faded out.
That was my training.
I faded out into the end of high school.
I did literally zero.
I wish plyos. I did less plyos and more dunking. I'm not kidding.
I did a ton of plyos with weightlift. I did a bunch of plyos and weightlifting, but it was like all like 1,000 rep vert shock crazy stuff. But I did all that stuff and it didn't do anything. Like, it didn't make me a freak. I was in high school, like, barely dunking. Like, you know?
Yeah, I did no plyos, and if I could go back, I would...
Still do no plyos.
I would have done less.
I would have done
I tried depth jump one time. I wouldn't have tried it that one time.
Yeah.
I've gotten better at dunking by doing dunking than I have any amount of plyos. And I'm great at plyos. I am really good at plyos. You see my alternate leg bounding? Way better than both these guys. You see my single leg hops for distance, way better than both these guys. You see my triple jump bounds, way better than these two. Depth jumps, now you're good, but initially my technique was better. I still am teaching Austin how to do them better, and like, both of them jump higher than me. So it's like, plyometrics are a skill. They're a skill. And guess what? Isaiah's still beaten me in a sprint. He has. Like, he still was faster than me, or he's beaten me at least before.
I need a rematch.
Yeah, Austin wants a rematch.
I was fat,
and I worked a night shift job, and I didn't sleep, and we ran on the track.
Yeah, so I'm still kind of like, my lens on plyos is that lower volume and high quality, high intensity is way better than high volume, you know, plyos. And I think, like, there's... The only case I can make for it is what the Danish and some European guys do in high jump. You know, a lot of guys do that shit. I've not seen it work. That's all I can say. I've not had anyone have a good experience with it. I've seen it work for a couple guys across the way, but it's not consistent. It's not something where I'm like, oh, this always works. Like, whereas I know that getting guys a lot more explosive and stronger and periodizing it with high quality, low volume. Like, I've been thinking about it a lot after our plyometric debate, I guess we'll call it that, and that's the conclusion I came to. So I would do it very low volumes, you know, throughout the year. And a lot of guys are like, I want to do plyos, and I'm like,
it's not a cheat code,
yeah.
All right, that's what I said. It was just,
I think that's it. Anything else we'd add? Would you stretch more?
No, I would have stretched less.
I only stretch to feel good. Like, I don't think it actually correlates with my vertical. I just feel better and I feel faster when I feel a little looser.
I think I would have stretched more just to see if it would have done anything, but I don't think it would have, because I've had periods where I stretch more and it still doesn't do anything.
I would have iced less.
Iced less, Dunload management.
Yeah. Less rituals.
I wouldn't have pushed through so much pain in my low back and shit. I would have listened to my body more. That's something I would have done.
That's a skill, though. That's a skill in itself, because only the elite guys know how to listen to their bodies. That's what I was learning, like, from Isaiah, Chris Bell, Kilgannon. Like Kilgannon was telling me, I've said this 1,000 times, it's like, the best exercise is rest sometimes. Like, you just have to listen to your body.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, because the guys who are elite are the ones that have been in the game for the longest. The only way you can be doing something this hard on your body for so long is if you know your body.
Yeah.
So, like, you can learn. That's why I like talking to, like the older dunkers, because, like, even though their training's not perfect, it's interesting to see how they listen to their body. Like, you know what I mean? Like, none of those guys push through insane levels of pain. That's something I would have changed. It's, like, it's okay to work through a little bit, but not... If you feel a 7 or an 8, like,
don't push through that. Yeah,
somebody would have just told me, like,
stop.
You gotta train to get rid of knee pain. Like,
train to get rid of. Bro, some people did. Some people did. It's just that you kept jumping.
Yeah. Well, the thing is I would rest completely. I would have knee pain. Like, there were so many wasted training weeks. Like, the amount of times where I rested a full week, and then came back feeling good, and then the pain came right back. Like, I probably did that like 5-6 times, man.
Yeah.
Or I just took a week off.
Yeah, I think that's what I did initially when I got knee pain. I took a week off at a time.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll be fine in a week.
Yeah. Did it work?
For the first, like, 5 jumps.
Nice. Anyways, yeah, I think that's everything. I think we pretty thoroughly covered all of it. Pretty interesting conversation here. If you guys are looking for training, go to thbstrength.com. This podcast is brought to you by THB Strength, the premier strength performance training for athletes. Best option in the entire world. Yeah. Anything else?
Nesquik.
It also has an entire jump training course. Oh. So if you're interested in learning about periodization, plyometrics, fundamentals of strength training.
How many hours of shit is in there at this point?
I
mean, just of the group calls alone, there's like 50 hours worth of content, Q&A's.
Just in the group calls, yeah. But actual, that stuff is probably like around 10 hours at this point.
I think it's more than that. It's probably closer to 20, yeah.
A lot of shit in there. Yeah.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Bye, boys. And girls, if you listen to this.
All right, let's find out how much my head can handle.